Joining us off the mountain this morning is Lonnie Dupree from Grand Marais, our own explorer who just conquered Denali in January. Good morning, Lonnie.
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. More to the point, how are you? You got frostbite or anything?
No frostbite. I'm doing well. I'm finally getting a little sleep and trying to just recover a little bit. I lost a bit of weight on the mountain, but I'm feeling good. And, looking forward to getting back to Minnesota at some point here.
Yeah, where it's cold. I know. Yeah, you and I have talked about that, Lonnie. I mean, we have a difference of an opinion on how nice being cold is. But you were on that mountain for how many days?
Well, I started on the 18th of December, and I ended up being on there 29 days, mm-hmm. And it was an interesting run this year because the weather all over Alaska was breaking warm weather records. Mm-hmm. They had rain in January. There was sleet on the mountain in January. There was reports of robins at a bird feeder in January. So, I mean, if that doesn't spell climate change, nothing does.
Yeah.
And climbing a mountain when it's like that is very, very difficult because it often brings just very deep snow throughout the entire mountain, which made it very difficult to pull a heavy sled of supplies in the early part of the trip, and then just wading through it with crampons as you get to the upper reaches of the mountain. So it was extremely difficult this year, and then I got pinned down for 5.5 days at 11,200 feet where I couldn't move. I just had to get out of the tent twice a day and shovel the snow off the tent so it wouldn't collapse it. Mm-hmm. And then I would much prefer a high pressure system where it's cold and clear versus low pressure where it's warm and windy and wet.
Well, the way this works is that you actually establish camps up the side of the mountain, and then, as I understand it, ferried equipment up and then came back down and then went back up and when the weather allowed. So that's a lot of climbing back and forth.
It's called double carrying. So you like say you're at 10,000 feet, you carry half your load up to 11,000. That helps you acclimate, and then you go back down, sleep at 10,000, and then bring the rest of your camp up to 11.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's called double carrying. It really adjusts your body well to altitude. And then it also just reduces the workload quite a bit. But you end up actually climbing the mountain twice that mm-hmm. way.
Now, remind us, Denali is what height? It's the highest North American mountain, right?
Yeah, I think it's 20,340 feet, and it's a big mountain. It's from respective base camps. It's actually more vertical feet of climbing than, let's say, from Everest base camp to summit. So mm-hmm. it's a big, big mountain, and you can see it. It's about 110 miles from Anchorage, and you can see it take up most of the skyline.
Really?
110 miles away, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's it like standing up there?
You look to the north and you go, what is that? Oh, my word, that's a mountain.
But when you're on it and right at the top, I imagine you didn't sit at the very peak, but what's it like?
Actually, I did.
You did? You
I
might
didn't
know.
Sit there very long, though.
No. Well, what's the view like? I did read a couple of things that you said about that, but tell us in your own words, what's it like to be standing at the top of the world?
Well, when you're climbing from the bottom and you're going through these humongous... Excuse me, I still got a little cough from the altitude,
yeah.
But on your way up there, you're going by these huge mountains, 13 to 17,000 feet with great big huge vertical
mm-hmm.
Sides on them, and you think of how big they are. But then when you get to the top of Denali, and you look down, these mountains look like bumps, you know, just bumps in the landscape. And it's just so, it's, you're so far up there, and the air is so thin, that you realize you're in a very interesting place, a little bit like being on the moon, I guess. And when I looked around, I could see not only the entire Alaska range, but I could see adjacent ranges, again, more towards the Bering Sea, and then to the north of me, by between where I was standing at Fairbanks, and so the it just opened up the entire skyline to all these other mountain ranges that you could see, and it was about 35 or 40 below zero, and it took me 9 hours to get there. I left at 5 o'clock in the morning. I got there 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I spent 10 minutes there, getting a really good look at my surroundings. Took a couple of pictures, and then I skedaddled out of there. It took me 9 hours to go up. Took me 3 hours 15 minutes to get down, partly because I was in a hurry, and the other part, you know, just being real careful when I go down, but being speedy because being fast and just getting out of there and back down to base camp, or back down to 17,000 camp, was very important.
So yeah, you want to be there before the sun goes down.
Well, actually, I got there about an hour and a half after the sun went down, but yeah. I could still see the silhouette of the surrounding terrain, so I could figure out where my camp was. And I was pretty tired after I think it was 12 hours 15 minutes of climbing at high altitude.
On the other hand, you must have been a little exhilarated by the whole idea that you finally accomplished what you set out to do 4 years ago.
Yeah, well, you know, Jay, I never really. It was such a small weather window, and it's been such a goal for such a long time that it never really sunk in that I was going to make it to the summit until I actually got up on Denali Summit Ridge, where you still have a little bit of a distance yet to go to get to the actual summit. Mm-hmm. And just because there has been so many roadblocks and so many just obstacles in the way, whether it was deep snow or very difficult terrain, or the weather just closing in, not being able to get that. I never really thought I was going to get to the summit until I actually went around the corner and seen where the summit was and that I could actually get there. And then when I got there, I was just kind of numb. I broke down a little bit when I got to the summit, just because it has been a lot of heartache for 4 years trying to get through there. A lot of rewards, too, but very, very difficult physically and mentally traveling in those conditions, both, you know, partly because it's Arctic winter, so it's dark, you know, most of the time. And so there's a lot of time spent in darkness on that trip, because there's 18 or 19 hours of dark and only a few hours of light each day.
So what do you think about while you're there on the side of the mountain, hunkered down for 5 days of being blown away and getting snowed on and that sort of thing? I mean,
it was a very serious situation at 11,200 feet when I got stuck. Mm-hmm. Right at that position, because as I was coming up, I stored my food and fuel in one location about 10 minutes away, and then climbed with just a day and a half's worth of food and 20 ounces of fuel. Mm-hmm. And so I had a day and a half's worth of food for 5.5 days and 22 ounces of fuel to, and I never really knew how long it would last. But I had to stretch all that out for 5.5 days. So I was a hungry camper by the time, basically 4 days without food.
So what I'm hearing is that if it's 10 minutes away, you're really pinned down if the weather was that bad that you couldn't go.
You can't leave 5 feet from the tent or you'd lose the tent. It's blowing horizontal snow, and twice a day I had to get out and dig my tent out. So never knew if it was going to last one day or 10 days, right? So mm-hmm. I just had to be really careful and just, I think my diet consists of, a quarter piece of candy bar and a little strip of pre-cooked bacon a day for, a few days, and then it just slowly ran out, and then I was just having a little bit of, just enough food to keep my stomach from growling,
mm-hmm.
and then just conserving fuel, because once you're out of fuel, you probably only got a few days to make it before you'd succumb to hypothermia and just dehydration.
Well, Lonnie, you're back. You're down on the solid earth again. And when will you be back here in Cook County?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking the end of the month, around the 27th, 28th. I'm hoping to get back and check on the chickens and maybe do a little cooking and lounge around in the house for a while and probably just have some fun just hanging out and. Having an extra cup of coffee in the morning, things like that.
Well, I am not going to put you on the spot by asking you if this is the last time we see Lonnie on a mountain, but because we never know where you're going to be. But I do know that along with myself and Gary and just about everybody that I can think of here in Cook County, congratulations to you. I know it's been a long time coming. It's been a dream. We all encourage you to think twice before you pick up on something like this again, because you're a nice guy to have around the community. But we all understand, you and I, a couple of years ago when you first picked up on this whole thing, talked about your love of winter and the almost impervious to what some of us wouldn't be able to stand at all. So you're a different kind of guy, Lonnie, and we're very pleased that you're safe, and we were pulling for you the whole way, and we'll look forward to seeing you in person and shake your hand when you get back to Cook County.
Thanks so much, Jay. I look forward to it, and please give my best to everybody at the radio station.
I shall. Thank you very much, Lonnie. We've been speaking with Lonnie Dupree, Grand Marais Explorer, who just soloed in January to the top of Denali, the highest peak in North America, and he's the first guy that's done that in the month of January by himself, and that's quite an accomplishment, but the man loves winter.